To a Sufi, this body is the temple of God. And the heart, the shrine. To a Sufi, this body is the temple of God, and the heart, the shrine. As long as man keeps God away from his temple, from his shrine, his limited ego reigns. And that reign is called the Iron Age by the Hindus. So we have the Golden Age, in which we control ourselves. But if the ego, or in control the ego, but if the ego is in control, it's called the Iron Age, not the Golden Age. It's Leo. That's a baby. It's a good boy. A person who has not opened his heart to God to abide in may yet be a good person, but as his life will be involved in the activities of the world, his ego will turn from bad to worse, culminating in the worst state of mind, and it is that condition of the mind which is personified in the religious term Satan. A person who has not yet opened his heart to God to abide in may yet be a good person, but as his life will be involved in the activities of the world, his ego will turn from bad to worse, culminating into the worst state of mind, and it is that condition of mind which is personified in the religious term Satan. It's a kind of darkness. We could call it an obscuration of the mind, that we become so enamored, entertained, or involved in the external life that it's as if the internal light and life become dim. And Murshid has talked about that in this body of teachings in other ways also. I do believe someone can be involved in every form of commerce or external life if one is mindful to dedicate whatever merit arises to the benefit of others. I think one can make any activity an activity of love, of compassion, of service, anything. There's this great story someone sent to me. It's a YouTube, I think. And it's about Johnny the Sacker. Johnny the stuffs the bags at the grocery store. Has anyone heard that or seen it? So sweet. There was a young boy. It's apparently a true story. And the management of the grocery store or the grocery store chain challenged all the workers to sort of bring their best gifts forward to their customers. And it happened that Johnny, you know, he was a sacker. I mean, he didn't have any particular gift. And what's more is he was, you could call him gifted, but some people call them handicapped. And he had Down syndrome. So he had some limited capacities. But he really took this to heart. And so he went home and he thought to himself, what can I do to make our customers feel special and give a special gift to them? What can I do? I'm just sacking their groceries. And he thought to himself, well, I could do something special when I'm sacking their groceries. So he asked his father to help him find some quotes of inspiration. And they made them on the computer and copied them and then cut them in little strips. Isn't that just, and it's a true story. And look, I have the goosebumps. So sweet. Like, just such a simple gesture. And every time he sacked somebody's groceries, he put a quote in there. Well, isn't that just beautiful? And so guess what happened? Everyone wanted to go to Johnny's line to see what the quote was, you know? And he made them feel so special. What a nice gift. And it was something very simple. But he found a way to meet that challenge of the management. Really beautiful, isn't it? So whatever we do, wherever we're doing it, we can offer it as a gift. It's a good story to illustrate that. So from the another reflection that we can have is another teaching from the Vedan. That's Leah. By the way, I would like to give you an idea. In Murshid's own words, when he left for India the last time, he traveled with a student who was with him. And next to his bed, he had sheets of paper. And that's when he started writing the Nirtan and the Vadan. The Gayan was already a collection of sayings. But he said to her, this is the Bible or Quran of our day. These sayings are. So when we read from the Nirtan or the Vadan, you can know how special those were to him. And those were written in Murshid's hand, and these were the sort of the last things that he gave before his passing in India. And so when he passed, the student collected them all and organized them. She felt it would have been Murshid's wish. So think about that. And you know that when we read in the universal worship, we're always reading from these scriptures of Murshid's for the truth, the divine truth that embodies all, whether known or unknown to the world, all the traditions and masters, saints, and prophets. So this is from the Vedan. God, and remember we were reading this about the personification of Satan. God and the devil are the two extreme poles of the ego. One represents perfection, the other, limitation. One represents perfection, the other limitation. It's good to contemplate that. Or it's like two sides to the same coin. They're always there together. Light and shadow are defined by each other. It takes both. But we see that it is all part of one continuum, but it is also a choice. It has to do with will. So I conclude by reading the last sentence of this teaching, and then I'd suggest we do a practice together. And I'm again reading from the teaching of today, Training by Abstinence. In order to learn to realize I am not, but God is, one must first deny oneself for his fellow men. One must first deny himself for his fellow men. Respecting another, enduring a person or an action which is uncongenial to oneself, tolerating all, overlooking the faults of others, covering the weaknesses that one finds in one's fellow men, willing to forgive, all these are the first lessons in self-denial. Abstinence. Should I read it again?
Mm-hmm. Yes, nice.
It's beautiful. I mean, mm-hmm. if just for the next month everyone went and just read this every day, wouldn't that be good?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It'd be a really good practice for us to do until we next meet. And again, this is from the Gothas. The teachings called Saluk or Moral Culture. The second body of these teachings, Training of the Ego, Training by Abstinence. In order to learn to realize I am not, but God is, one must first deny oneself for his fellow men. So this is like the practice. This is the practice to get there. Get there. Respecting another, enduring a person or an action which is uncongenial to oneself, tolerating all, overlooking the faults of others, covering the weakness that one finds in one's fellow men, willing to forgive. All these things are the first lessons in self-denial.
First lessons?
Yeah.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And you know, but it's so hard because what do we want to do? We want to defend ourselves.
Judge.
We want to correct other people. We want to judge. You know, we want to make ourselves right and other people wrong. It's so much energy. If one would only think about how much energy one expends in doing that.
Don't we want to operate or achieve a higher plane than that? No, I mean, my realm would not be to judge and to whatever with other people, but to follow that prescription. It was reminiscent in my mind of the Desiderata, mm-hmm. to go placidly, to, you know, to tolerate all. And I just strive for that.
Oh, yes. I think we do.
Yeah.
But it's not easy.
Not easy.
And the tendencies are there. And those we much stories be mindful of. Because I think even if we think we're doing good is also part of the trap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I like the quote, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Yeah. So we want to be mindful of that, because even when we think we're doing good, oh boy, that could be a trap as well. I think that's maybe why they said, I once knew the origin of that quote, and I can't recall it at this moment. Maybe someone else knows.
Which quote?
Silence is golden.
Silence is golden. Silver, our speech is silver. I think this is a classic old English proverb, but I'll let you know.
Well, I think the whole idea of silver was the way that Jesus was sold for silver, too. So maybe that's where it comes from, way long time ago, not even old English, but silence is golden.
Mm. Mm.
And we also have that expression about being silver-tongued, right? Silver-tongued.
Silver-tongued devils.
That's right, silver-tongued devils. So, I'm checking my time again. I think it might be wonderful if we practice Zikr together. But I would like to read a little bit about this practice from Murshid Hidayat Inayat Khan's papers. The unpublished ones, but very illuminating, I assure you. Shall I? Okay. He said it today, too. He says this: the ego is an illusion. It is the energy of the soul. The ego is an illusion. It is the energy of the soul. What is detrimental to our happiness is only seeing ourself and not the divine presence. What is detrimental to our happiness is only seeing ourself and not the divine presence. Do not get attached to feelings of guilt, but bury them in the earth. Throw them in the water. Throw them in the fire. Throw them in the air. Again, like his father, Hazrat Inayat Khan, the elements. Mm-hmm. Leo, I would really like for you to sit down again, please. Thank you. Disregard the negative and give attention to the positive. Seems like there was a song like that, wasn't there? Mm-hmm. Wasn't there a long time
ago? And it was Disney.
With the positive and eliminate the negative and latch on to the affirmative and don't mess with Mr. In Between.
That's good. Very good. Thank you. What was the second line? Sing it all again.
Yeah. Eliminate the negative.
Eliminate the negative. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Latch on to the affirmative. Eliminate the negative. Accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative, and don't mess with Mr.
In Between. Very good. Who's saying that?
Do you remember?
The Broadway ship, wasn't it?
Who?
The Broadway ship.
Oh, could be.
Edwina Jones, I think, too, if there's some such a person like that comes around.
Came out of the ethers. Okay. So, disregard the negative and give attention to the positive. The external zikr is done with the eyes closed as a purely meditative practice for serenity. The external zikr is done with the eyes closed as a purely meditative practice for serenity. You may be asking yourself, what is that external zikr? Does anyone remember? Pop quiz.
Is there a word we're supposed to say, the circle, when we breathe in and we see the circle and then we exhale and see the dot? Are there two mantras to go with that?
No, you don't need to, but that's another subject. Yeah, you can just use your breath.
Great, I love it.
Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah.
It's really beautiful. Excuse me.
You don't get an answer?
As soon as I say it, you're all going to go, oh, we knew that. Okay. This is not my body. This is the temple of God. This is not my body. This is the temple of God. And Murshid Hidayat says, what does this is not my body, this is the temple of God mean? Can we say that? Yes. he answers. If one adds, nothing exists save God. If we are a radiance of the divine, and if we are inviting that presence, that radiance within the temple of our hearts, it is understandable that one would not feel at rest if one knows that one has done anything that is not pleasing to the divine presence. Again, Mershad Hadayat's example of the dirty doormat. You know, when you invite guests over, don't you clean your home to prepare for them? All right, that's what we're doing. This is the temple of God, is the expression of the heart which says, it is a sacred duty to respect that temple. It is a sacred duty to respect that temple. And one could say, as you said, Karina Latifa, like being conscious of what our intake is, not overloading on certain things, a balance, because the body is the most material manifestation of all these levels of our being. And so caring for that also can help the consciousness move down and up. This is the temple of God, is the very expression of the heart which says, it is a sacred duty to respect that temple. The more conscious one is of being face to face with the divine presence, the more effort one makes in avoiding to displease God. We would not be happy if we would not respect this body, which is the temple of God. Hazrat Inayat Khan speaks about the false and the real ego, meaning the real ego is the godly energy with which we survive. The real ego is the godly energy with which we survive. We have to do something for our living. But this is not what we are. We have to do something for our living, but that is not what we are. We are rays of the divine presence. I remember one time, a long time ago, I was invited to a conference in Switzerland to present about my work and to speak about it. And because I was traveling alone, some of the dignitaries of the conference befriended me, and we had gone out to dinner. And someone asked me, and we are still very, very good friends, and this was 1990 maybe. It was right before, the month before I went to India for the first time. I took a train to see Mershad's home in Saran in France, that when I was in Geneva. I took the train over, and then within a month I was at his resting place in India, New Delhi. But someone asked me, he said, so what is it that you do? And we were sitting there, and I had a glass of wine, and I ran my fingers over the rim. I remember it very vividly. It was a real poignant moment. And I ran my fingers, and I said, do you want to know what it is I do or who I am? And he said, well, that is the ultimate question, isn't it? But interestingly enough, this person understood perfectly what I was saying, because he, although Swiss, but raised in the French area of Switzerland, he had lived the first 8 years of his life in India. Mm-hmm. His father was a doctor for the World Health Organization and had been living in India. So he well understood this question. We've become very good friends and have remained friends over the years. But, you know, that is the point, isn't it? In some ways, also, I will say Mersha Hadayat has said to me that any accomplishment that happens, he always says, remember that my father always said that the external world reflects the internal world. And so in one way, it is also very good to be, if one can, if one has that inclination, and everyone has a different inclination, but if one is a more public person, more external person, whatever, the accomplishments are also part of the fulfillment of one's life. You understand? And Mershit says that about the message, that there will be some that will write. They don't have the ability to speak. And there will be people that will speak about the message because that's their capacity. And there will be some that will show in their manner, you know, in their manner, the practice. Many different rays, many different expressions. There's not just one. Please don't think that there is. So, one more. Again, I repeat. Hazrat and Icon speaks about the false and the real ego, meaning the real ego is the godly energy with which we survive. We have to do something for our living, but that is not what we are. We are rays of the divine presence. When doing the external zikr, at that moment, one is standing face to face with God, becoming thereby conscious of one's responsibilities. This is not my body. This is the temple of God. This is not my body. This is the temple of God. This is not my body. This is the temple of God. This is not my body. This is the temple of God. This is not my body. This is the temple of God. This is not my body. This is the temple of God. This is not my body. This is the temple of God. This is not my body. This is the temple of God. This is not my body. This is the temple of God. This is not my body. This is the temple of God. This is So if we think about that, the kind of abstinence of denial of this individuated self that becomes concretized, like Murshid said, the heart becomes hardened because we get misidentified with that false self. And here, when we draw this line across ourselves, it's that negation. And when we draw the vertical line, it's a kind of affirmation. This is not my body, the negation. This is the temple of God, the affirmation. And of course, this is also the motion of the zikr. And also for your understanding, you can read again in the Gathas, volume 13, Murshid Hazar of Anayat Khan's teachings on this symbol, the cross, because he gives the symbol of the cross. And he talks about this as the greatest protection. He says sometimes even to imagine oneself before oneself, an image of oneself, and one is drawing this line over the image of one's body. It's a very beautiful and powerful symbol. And of course it has become associated with Christianity, but one can also realize that that was the greatest sacrifice to offer one's body to God. This is not my body. This is the temple of God. And when we make this motion, Hazar and Icon also talks about that the left side of the body is the heart. It, one could also say this is our individualized self, and the right side is the soul. You see that? And so we acknowledge both parts of these our being with this motion. And then the downward motion of La Elaha El Alahu. La Elaha El Alahu. And I'd like to say, Murshid Hidayat made a great emphasis of this last month when he talked about the zikr of Anayat Khan being a soft zikr, a gentle zikr, a feminine vibration zikr, a receptive zikr. Now we know that we have these more jalal zikrs. This is not that. This is not that. It's very soft. It's very gentle. And in that we are making this kind of circle. We're encircling the shrine of the heart, the spiritual heart. And so we make the motion, La, Elaha, El, Alahu. And we stay in the heart. And some zikrs go, El, Alahu. No, keep here. In the temple, in the shrine. I'm going to move for one moment because actually I think I would like to use the Shruti box today to make this zikr happen. How about that? So excuse me for just a moment while I step back here.
Accentuate the positive.
Oh, we'll
eliminate the negative.
We'll get that over to you. How about that? That's a great song. I think somebody sung it like Dean Martin or Frank Sinatra too. The Lennon Sisters. That was it. The Clooney Sisters. I think a lot of people sing.
Yeah.
So let's get our attunement back. There is nothing. Only God is. Only God exists. It's all a flickering and manifestation in and out.
Yeah.
We offer our reverence, our homage, and our gratitude. To all the masters, saints of Prophets, whether they are known or unknown to this world. Who have held aloft the light of truth through the darkness of human ignorance. Before the closing prayer, let us again remember all those that are in need of comfort, courage and strength, endurance, love and light. We offer this for their benefit. If the teachings are of benefit, we invite you to show your appreciation through a contribution, not necessary, but do know that it only flows through us to other projects, and so the merit of your giving will be increased. We'll have the closing prayer, and then if there are any comments from in here or through the broadcast, we certainly will invite those. But let us make now this offering of the prayer of Sufi and Ali Khan, the Khatun. O thou, who art the perfection of love, harmony and beauty, Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide men. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit and unite us all in thy perfect being.